I'm Wade Keller, editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter and former host here at PW Torch Livecast. If you're looking for my shows, they have moved as of July 2017. They're now called the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available through Podcast One. Enter Wade Keller on your podcast app or iTunes and subscribe to the new Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, where I cover Raw and my first show of the week, SmackDown, with my second show of the week, and then the Flagship Edition with a co-host, and we cover a broad array of pro wrestling current events, and then I end the week with a weekly interview. That's the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, now at Podcast One. Subscribe today. Just search Wade Keller.
Log Talk Radio.
For Saturday, September 9th, 2017, welcome to the Deep Dive with Rich Fan. I'm Rich Fan. Tonight, we're going to be talking with you guys about the world of wrestling, and as always, you're free to join in, either calling area code 515-605-9345, or hopping on that email and pwtdive@gmail.com. Again, that's pwtdive@gmail.com. Now, today is a very fun episode. Usually I have homework, but it's kind of a dealer's choice because I've received emails. I got several calls last week, and as part of a little series I'm putting together on the importance of representation, I've been trying to seek out co-hosts and guests that can talk about the tapestry that makes pro wrestling fans, its wrestlers, promoters, etc. So I'm really honored that one of my buddies on Twitter, at She's So Offbeat, Bree, decided to grace us with her presence today. I'm going to bring her on in a moment. We're going to be talking about everything under the sun, how she became a pro wrestling fan, what she likes, what she doesn't, Mae Young Classic, and of course your calls. So like I said, feel free to join in our conversation. Once you call, area code 515-605-9345, hitting one on the touchtone pad. If you have rotary, as always, you are out of luck. So without further ado, Bree, welcome to the Deep Dive, and thank you for joining. Can you hear me? Uh-oh. I did everything but. All righty. Looks like we're having some connection issues. So, in the interim, let's talk Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar and Braun Strowman are going to be having a colossal main event coming up, and I, for one, am enjoying the interludes akin to Peter Griffin and the clown. I want to say it's the clown that show, or the bear that shows up, and they just fight and fight all over the place. That's basically what Big Show and Braun has become. You pick the environment, and they just go to town. So that's really cool. Also, I'm looking forward to the final of the Mae Young Classic. We're going to be talking about that as well. Obviously, at this point, spoilers are kind of what they are. So if you want to talk about that, I want to talk about it with you as well. So while I'm trying to get my illustrious partner on, I'm going to bring on Mr. 862. Kylan, how are you doing this fine Saturday? And welcome to Deep Dive.
I'm very well, Rich. How are you doing this week?
So far, so good. I'm enjoying the opportunity to chat with you guys, and I'm looking forward to bringing on Bree once we get our little situation sorted out. What do you have for me this week?
Well, I was just redoing this week's homework assignment shortly before going on the air, and for those of you who did not manage to receive this week's homework, I believe you assigned us to view the final non-title match for or of the Mae Young Classic Rev as the final match, which will air on Tuesday night after SmackDown, is for the NXT Women's Championship. So, as I said, I believe you assigned us to watch the semifinal matches before the big match on Tuesday night. Am I correct?
You are correct, Kylan. So what were your thoughts on the semifinals? Are you happy with the winners and your observations?
I wish Abby Lace would have gone a little bit further before she had to lose, but other than that, I would say I am thoroughly happy with what was shown.
Excellent. Now, I'm going to cheat a little bit because I'm going to put you back on hold for a second, and we're going to finish this conversation. But first, I want to bring on my co-host and guest for the week, Bree. Welcome to the Deep Dive.
Hello. How are you, Rich?
I'm good. I'm glad to hear you. I know sometimes this the co-host function has been hit or miss for me, so thank you for being flexible and being willing to chat with everyone today.
No problem. I'm very excited to be on the Deep Dive, so I am I'm ready to chat. Are we talking about the Mae Young Classic, or are we just talking about everything kind of in general right now?
Well, right now, we're gonna finish up with Kylan, so I'm going to bring him back on. He has some observations on the Mae Young Classic. Feel free to hop in, and I'm just going to let it go. I'm gonna defer to you. So let me bring Kylan back. Kylan, you're now on with me and Bree. Welcome back, and continue your observations.
Well, so as I just said, I was kind of surprised that WWE elected not to have Abby Lace go a little bit further. I'm not saying she should have won, but I thought she should have come a little bit closer than what she did. Otherwise, I am very happy with what we saw.
Excellent. Bree, what do you think about that? Were you happy, unhappy with Abby Lace going as far as she did? Were you hoping for her to go further? What do you think about Kyle's comments?
I agree with Kylan, I'm sorry. I loved Abby Lace's performance throughout the tournament. She was a definite star. Her expressions, her moveset, just everything about her just shined throughout the tournament. But I do think that she was eliminated at the right time, because just imagining going forward and facing the other competitors who made it further, I don't think she would have been able to keep up. But I'm very, very happy with her performance throughout.
Awesome. What else do you have for us, Kylan?
And my question for this week is going to be, Which of the semi-finalists of the tournament do you feel are least likely to be signed, and why?
Okay, well, thank you very much for that. And as always, Kylan, a pleasure. Bree, who do you think? Out of the semifinalists, do you think who's the most likely, who's the least likely to be signed by WWE?
Now, the semifinalists. One second. Let me think.
Mm-hmm. And for the folks who aren't. I'm sorry. For the folks who aren't following, and maybe you haven't watched yet, Just so you know, the semifinalists are Mercedes Martinez, Shayna Baszler, Kairi Sane, and Toni Storm. So if you didn't watch episodes, episode 8, basically, there you go.
I think not really everyone. I think it's probably half and half. Kairi Sane, for sure, we already know that she's signed. Shayna Baszler, of course, could possibly be signed since they're trying to do the four horsewomen versus four horsewomen thing. But also, Mercedes Martinez is the cornerstone of Shimmer. And Toni Storm, it's a little bit tricky because, yes, she's the Progress champion or Progress Women's champion now, but the WWE also has kind of a deal with Progress. So it could be possible that she could sign, but she could just kind of linger in that indie space. So, but my definites are Kairi Sane and Shayna Baszler.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Shayna Baszler's. My host on Wednesdays when I do the East Coast cast, Travis Bryant, can't stand her, but I love her MMA style. I love her emotions. Oh, you should. I'm telling you, Brie, you should hear it. Like, we were arguing, I guess real time, because, you know, if you download the podcast, it's wherever you want to listen to it. But it's like 12:30 in the morning, and I'm yelling at him because he says it looks unrealistic for someone to be kicking in a wrestling ring instead of, you know, like mat-based exchanges. And I'm like, well, I see this in New Japan all the time. He's like, oh, the place where people headbutt each other and their skulls explode? I was like, all right, buddy, it was one guy. And then that just – Travis is the king of finding one little nugget and starting an argument and just throwing the grenade and walking away. So, yeah, I love Baszler's style. I really appreciated her match with Mercedes Martinez, mainly because I'm a geek when it comes to the little things in wrestling. I didn't notice until they wrestled each other that Shayna's Queen of Spades and Mercedes Martinez's M's are basically the same thing, just inverted.
Mm-hmm.
And then having on top of that the fact that Shayna was trained by Mercedes, and that was the only woman whose hand she shook. That, you know, little things like that. I like things, especially after she choked the crap out of Candice LeRae. I mean, Candice LeRae, I mean, she's just the innocent girl next door, and she choked her like she was out. Her husband should have jumped the guardrail. Like, that's one of those down four moments that Johnny Gargano failed, but that's okay. That's okay.
Well, he did pop in after, and like, and then Shayna kicked Candice LeRae, and Johnny just was there like, hey, why'd you do that? Like, he didn't do anything else.
because he wants to make sure he can say, good. I've been in those situations before. He's like, hey, I defended, right? You saw that. You saw I looked her in the face and I said, don't you kick my wife and don't you choke her out again. All right. I might need to get authorities if you do it again. I'm not concerned. But I might call somebody. But yeah, it was hilarious, and I enjoyed Mercedes and Shayna. Kairi Sane, I was listening to the Wrestling Observer Live a few days ago, or actually yesterday, and Dave Meltzer was mentioning how he thought Kairi and Asuka were basically kind of the same person in terms of potential to be super popular at NXT. But I think they're different, and I want to get your opinion on this. For me, Kairi seems like the authentic babyface, like white meat babyface, where every match I've seen her in this tournament, you think she's going to die at least three times. And then when she wins, she's in tears because she doesn't believe she survived it.
Well, I agree with you. I mean, Asuka and Kairi are completely different. Their styles are different. Of course, they both hit hard because that's just Japanese strong style anyway, but Kairi is so sweet, so innocent, and, you know, like, just so pure as a heel. Or not a heel, sorry, as a face. And Asuka is a complete badass. Like, she's the complete opposite. I don't know why the Observer would say they're the same. It's almost kind of racist. Like, why are they the same?
See, I was glad my boy Mike Sempervivi jumped in, and he was like, whoa, 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 hold up, player. And he was kind of like, well, you know, they're two different styles of people. Like, you don't say that, like, Ahmed Johnson and The Rock are the same person, essentially. But a lot of times I think Japanese, especially because Japanese women have, like you said, have that base of such a strong style. But I look at her and she is just, she toes that line between, like, not everyone could come out, because I don't know if you remember in the 90s, not everyone could come out looking like a pirate and be cool. Because for every Kari Kane, right, you have Jean-Pierre Lafitte. And you see Jean-Pierre Lafitte and you're like, come on, man. Why you got the eye patch on? What are we doing here? And it's insane. So, yeah, so I'm happy. I think before we go too far, though, I do want to back up and kind of turn this to you, because honestly, I have been getting so many comments and so many emails and so many people saying, you know, The Observer, The Torch, you know, two of the bigger entities in terms of sports journalism when it comes to pro wrestling, don't have a female voice. And I am a big person on representation. So I wanted to hear from a woman that likes pro wrestling without pulling the name your five matches. I bet you don't even know what an arm drag is. What's a Ushiguroshi? You know, without any of that silliness. And just talk to you about things that are going on in the world of wrestling and how you feel about it. And obviously, I don't want this to be, this is Bree. She represents all of womanhood. But I do want your take. So what do you think overall of the tournament? Do you think it's appropriate that they had this as the first tournament they did entirely on demand, as opposed to the UK tournament and the Cruiserweight Classic?
I think it worked out perfectly.
Okay.
They made their mistakes. I can't even speak English right now. They learned from their mistakes of both the CWC and the UK tournament, because the CWC, it seemed like they just didn't have a plan afterwards. Hence, this is why we're going through the cruiserweight mess that we're in now. And then with the UK tournament, it was just, again, they didn't plan well, but it was over like in two nights and then with no payoff. So I feel like them putting all of the Mae Young Classic on demand now and having a live final builds to a perfect finale. And it gives them time to plan and make sure that after this is, you know, all set and these women have a brand to go to or something to do within the WWE. So I think it's great that they've done it on demand.
Now, recent reports have said that Tuesday's final is basically timed to be a half hour, because that's what they've scheduled, I guess, in the building, per a couple of reports I saw before the show, between SmackDown and 205 Live. Do you feel like that's enough? Because to me, looking at that time frame, that means there's going to be almost no undercard, so there won't be a cool tag match between the women or six-woman tag or something like that. They only can do the final and kind of just go, go, go. How do you feel about that?
That works for me, because it doesn't need to be. If you think about it, on Monday Night Raw, we have 3.5 hours of wrestling and we're completely exhausted from watching it. So the SmackDown is perfectly 2 hours and we immediately get this finale right after. I think it's perfect. We don't need anything extra. The tournament has been more than enough. So just to give this finale would be great.
Okay. And I have one more question for you, but it'll be after the break. That's what we call in the business a teaser. And so you guys have to stick around to hear my next question for Bree here on the Deep Dive.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right, guys. Welcome back to the Deep Dive with me, Rich Fan, and I have my partner in crime for this evening, Bree, at She's So Offbeat on Twitter. I was just about to ask her a very important question involving the Mae Young Classic, and Bree, I'm going to bring it back on to ask you the question. Do you think the WWE should award the NXT Women's Championship to the winner of the tournament?
Can you repeat that question? I'm sorry. I heard the NXT champion part.
Oh, yeah, sure. Do you think they should make an announcement a la the Cruiserweight Classic right before the match that the NXT Women's Championship will go to the winner.
And okay? The only reason why I say that is because there are so many contenders in NXT now. I think that maybe making the winner of the Mae Young Classic a number one contender in NXT would work, but immediately giving them the title, nah. It just, it wouldn't seem right because you have Ember, Ruby Riott, Peyton Royce. I mean, you have so many women in that division that could easily stake their claim to be ahead of someone who just won a tournament. So nah, that wouldn't be cool. But honestly, it wouldn't surprise me if they did it.
Now, how about this? I'm going to change the game up a little bit for you. What if they said that the woman who wins the tournament is the number one contender versus whomever on the NXT women's side wins, say, because between now and the next Survivor Series, the big four pay-per-view for them and the subsequent NXT show, between now and the takeover, they could have an NXT women's tournament. And let's say Ember Moon wins that. So you would have Ember versus the winner of the Mae Young Classic, and the winner of that match at the takeover wins the women's title. Do you think that's a little more egalitarian, or even that's a little hokey?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's way more equal, and it would make more sense booking-wise. And it would build a storyline, not only for the women at NXT, but also for the winner of the Mae Young Classic. And it would give them a chance to kind of integrate themselves into NXT in the meantime. So I think that would be perfect.
Awesome. So now before we get to our next caller, I do want to ask you some questions about how you got into wrestling and just about you. So why don't you tell the folks what brought you to wrestling and, you know, whatever you're comfortable with, like what you do today as far as like any involvement, what you like about it, what shows, what promotions you follow, et cetera.
Okay, cool. Well, I have been watching wrestling since I was about 3, and that was in the era of the late 80s, Hulkamania running wild completely. And it was through, honestly, my family members, like my dad, my granddad, some of my aunts, like we all watched wrestling. And I'm from Nashville originally, so that was a hotbed territory, even though, you know, Nashville is about 3 hours from Memphis. The Memphis territories with the Jarretts and the Lawlers, like they'd still show all of that on TV in Nashville, but also we got Crockett Promotions and WCW and WCCW. So I was exposed to so much wrestling at a young age. And oddly, when the network came on, I found myself and my brother at one of my first events when I was like 10. So yeah, I've been watching wrestling for a long, long time, almost 30 years. And now I do social media management, and I've also worked with some independent wrestling companies. If they're listening, they definitely know who I am because they've seen me kind of run around their shows and run their IG feeds and post pictures and do all that fun stuff behind the scenes. But now I really follow, of course, WWE naturally, but I'm a huge New Japan fan, huge Progress fan, and I'm starting to get into Australian and New Zealand wrestling. I haven't followed it as closely as I should, but I'm very, very intrigued by that scene. So international wrestling has really piqued my interest as of late. But yeah, I'm just an all-around wrestling fan. I'm a bit of a nerd. My husband laughs and knows that I know more about wrestling than he does. So he comes to me with questions about it. But yeah, it's all good. I love wrestling.
Now for you, you mentioned Progress, and that's something after my own heart, as you know. I think my parents are listening right now, and they know I pray for them and love them as they live in Tampa and the hurricane's coming in. I'm worried about them, but they said they're fine, so I'm not going to worry. But my mom knows I can't keep a secret. I'm horrible at keeping secrets. Like, 1 year for Christmas, I opened up everyone in the house gifts like 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, I'm horrible. Like, if I buy my wife a gift, I bought her Uggs 1 year when we were dating. I bought the shoes at the shoe store, drove to her apartment, knocked on her door, gave her the Uggs, drove home. That's how weird I am with it. So I have these great opportunities. I have some folks down the line that's going to be on the deep dive as co-hosts, as guests, particularly talking about the idea of diversity and inclusion, representation for all in wrestling. And once I get them like actually done and sealed, I will scream them to the rooftops. But until then, I will say, in addition to episodes like the one you're listening to with me and Bree, definitely I want to point everyone to my Darius Lockhart interview, because I think he's an awesome independent wrestler with CWF Mid-Atlantic. Him and Caprice Coleman are currently tag team champions, and they do a really awesome – they're doing a really good job of not only representing themselves as characters, but as men of color at a time where in the South you wouldn't assume that they would be the faces. But as Darius mentioned on Twitter, he has a move in the corner. He says no justice, no peace before he does his corner kicks, and the fans are chanting around along with him. And I think that's really neat. So when you talk about progress, like that's the first thing I think about, progress for everyone. I think about the fact guys like Jack Sexsmith. I think about the diversity of body types. I mean, we're going to go back to the Mae Young Classic and talk about that as well. But that's what pulled me into progress, seeing people who can look a bevy of ways, and they're all good wrestlers, and no one has to be shown as less than, if that makes sense.
Right. And now is the perfect time for inclusion for everyone in wrestling. Like, I can't remember the promotion, and I wish I could remember the name, but it's a promotion of New York. And during Pride Month, they ran a Pride show focusing on LGBTQ wrestlers, and I thought that was amazing. I was just like, this is the perfect time to do it. So inclusion for everyone is very important to me to see in wrestling, because, I mean, as fans, we always look to find a performer that we can relate to. So I think it's cool that it's way more inclusive than it used to be.
Now, with progress, who would you say your favorite male and female wrestlers are?
Oh, wow. Male, I am a huge fan of British Strong Style. Of course, I hate to say that I'm on the bandwagon, but I absolutely am. I'm a huge fan of Pete Dunne. Pete Dunne is the perfect heel. He's just mean. He's just so mean, and I love it. And the female is definitely Toni Storm. And she's kick-ass. She's so much fun to watch and just a burst of energy. And she has such a long way to go. And she's only, what, 20 or 21?
Yeah, so, I think she's 21,
so yeah. Those are my favorites in progress right now.
Yeah, I'm with you. Now, for me, I try to talk everyone's ear off, because Jimmy Havoc is what brought me to progress, and seeing clips of him and his evolution into the psychopath that threatened Will Ospreay with a fire axe. And then on the women's side, I adore, and I was really glad I got to see her live and chat with her a little bit in Orlando when I ran into you, Jenny Couture. Mm-hmm. Because Jenny,
I love her.
Everything I look for in that sort of character. And if you guys, I'll definitely include this in the show notes. If you get a chance, you need to look on YouTube. Progress did an interview series with her and Drea DiMatteo, that's the actual actress. I want to say it's Rachel DiMatteo. On how she used to be her assistant, and her assistant's now challenging her to wrestle. And they have this backstory. She brought this woman from Italy to make her dresses because she's a fashion designer, fashionista / pro wrestler. It's the best of both worlds. Like, it's great. It's not in a, you know, and I love Breezango. It's not in that Breezango Zoolander way where it's goofy. It's this woman is so stuck up, and she finds beneath her assistant that she would train on the side to wrestle. And Jenny, her facials, her moves, her presence is just regal.
I love Jenny, but I want her to take it up like 50 notches. Like, I want her to be so extreme, because her gimmick is perfect, but I feel like it can be amplified even more to be way more over the top, because she's a really good shit talker. She's amazing in that realm. but like I want her gimmick to be like beyond flashy, and I hope she gets to become more flamboyant soon. And piggybacking off of what you said about Jimmy Havoc, I mean, gosh, his visual promos are unmatched. Absolutely unmatched. Like, they're so gory, so goth. I love it. I absolutely love it.
Yeah, he was another person I met and I had a good chat with, waiting to meet with British Strong Style. And we were talking about the night before he did the infamous Fire Axe interview. And he was just so chill and just so like, hey, I felt like I had the best, worst wrestling night of my life, followed by the best night of my life professionally. And to me, especially looking at my day job with working in careers and seeing people grow and go into their dreams and stuff, him having that is a great example for everyone in terms of like, you could have that worst day of your life and it's followed by the best day. And then, you know, for me being, you know, Pollyanna optimist, you need that bad day for the good day to feel even better. And so I'm really happy to see him, even if it's in CZW. I'm not the biggest CZW fan, especially the older I get, because I like a good match with blood, but I don't like blood matches or blood death matches, if that makes sense, especially with Legos.
Yeah.
As a father of a five-year-old, that's sadistic. Like, I step on a Lego in my house, and I feel like I need to, like, call my next of kin and just tell them it's over. I could only imagine taking a bump on that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's just that's me and my crazy self. Now, I'm going to get to a call, but before I do want to ask you a question about British Strong Style. I thought it was hilarious because when people look at the Cruiserweight Classic, you can look on YouTube right now. A difference a year makes. Jack Gallagher went up against the Bruiserweight Pete Dunne to get into the Cruiserweight Classic. And my opinion has been the best thing that ever happened to Pete Dunne was not being in the Cruiserweight Classic, because that allowed him to grow in Progress, Rev Pro, everywhere else in Europe. And then by the time they hired him for the UK tournament, he was worlds better. Not that he was horrible then, but I think he had the character down. He broke up with his brother to team up with Tyler Trent Seven, and then they brought along Tyler Bate. And once they made BSS, that's become the faction. I mean, it's the Bullet Club of the UK. It's the Los Ingobernables du Japon of the UK. It's the cool stable that they only have three guys. It isn't going to be like 50 or 60 people. And I think that also makes it a little special.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, just imagine if they actually kind of got cornered into that cruiserweight or the CWC tournament, and they would have been completely overshadowed by now. So it is a good thing that the UK tournament did come along and gave them somewhat of a spotlight. Now I'm still hoping to see what happens, because I know that WWE does work with Progress openly. So I wonder what's in the works to kind of make them more visible. So
yeah,
I hope we get to see more of them. I kind of miss seeing them.
Yeah.
And
I know this is like kind of like my wrestling nerd coming out, but I would love for them to finally, like, because of what's going on with the UK tournament, and mainly their work in Progress is the heel version of British Strong Style, kind of like CCK. They, you know, depending on the promotion they're in, their faces are heels. For the most part now, British Strong Style are heels everywhere they go, mainly because they wear their NXT jumpers and do the Triple H water impersonation. So all the indie fans are like, boo, hiss, boo. And I don't know about you, but I, for one, I am not brave nor willing to have Pete Dunne bite my middle finger. Like, I'm not usually in the practice of flipping the bird on wrestlers, but Pete would not be a guy I want to risk doing that and have him bite my finger. So now let's see. Before we go to our next subject, we have some callers on hold. I'm going to go to a quick, as Steve Austin would say, pause for the cause. And when we come back, Bree and I are going to talk with you guys about what you want to talk about, because we have two people on hold and I want to kind of get to them. So stand by, because we're going to go to a break here on the PW Torch Livecast Saturday edition, The Deep Dive with Rich Van.
Hello, you people. I'm Pat McNeil. Every Sunday night, Greg Parks and I will bring you Wrestling Night in America here on PW Torch Livecast. We're on at 8 p.m. Eastern most weeks, or immediately following the night's pay-per-view. We'll talk Raw, SmackDown, NXT, GFW, New Japan, Ring of Honor, WWN, and all the latest wrestling news with your phone calls. So don't miss it. Be there.
All right, we're back, and thanks for the promo for Pat, Pro Wrestling Night in America. Definitely check it out. It's fun. It's part of the new lineup of PW Torch Livecast shows. Once our intrepid boss, editor-publisher Wade Keller, went to Podcast One, it kind of gave us all a shot at running the ball, so to speak. And so I'm enjoying my Saturdays. I know Pat's enjoying his Sundays, and I'm enjoying my Saturday here today so far, Bree. We're going to be talking to you guys. Area code 515-605-9345. That's 515-605-9345. We're going to take our second call, 623. Why don't you state your name and where you're calling from?
Hey, Rich. Hey, Bree. This is Brian calling from Phoenix.
Brian, always welcome. Now, let me make sure I got the right year. 26 year?
That would be correct. 26 years.
26 year VIP member. So what do you have for us today on the deep dive?
Well, first of all, Bree, it's good to meet you and always good to hear a new voice talking wrestling.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, you're quite welcome. And like Rich said earlier, Bree, we don't expect you to speak for all women smart wrestling fans, but I do have two questions. Well, I actually have one question for you, then I have one question for overall for both of you. But Bree, let me start with you first. So I always like hearing about how people were introduced to wrestling, and you said about how you grew up in the Nashville area. I'm sorry about that. And you was watching with your dad and your grandparents and aunts. But my question is, was there a particular woman wrestler? Because when you said like late 80s, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of, well, let's say in WWF at that time, wasn't a whole lot of women wrestling going on. It probably was a year or two, maybe 3 years before Alundra Blaze came on. But there was like a dark hole there for a while where there were no women wrestlers. So, and, you know, I'm not very Memphis knowledgeable. And then same thing, well, a little bit with WCCW. But can you explain a little bit about where there's some women wrestler, woman wrestler that kind of helped you along with your fandom?
Sure. In the late 80s, I vaguely remember watching GLOW because, again, my dad and my granddad were marks. So I barely remember, like, Attila the Hun, and that was the only person that stood out to me. So I remember watching GLOW as a kid. But going more so into the early 90s, Alundra Blaze and Bull Nakano in 94, that feud, was the first major women's wrestling feud that I have recollection of. And my brother and I used to sit and watch them feud through SummerSlam. And I remember the recap that they had in, gosh, which interview was that? It was Survivor Series, where Alundra lost the title in Japan. Or, wait, did she lose it or did she win it? Either way. It was the match that she had in Japan, and they were recapping it during Survivor Series. So that was the first major female feud that I can fully remember being a part of and being active and enjoying. Other than that, I was always a fan of Sherry. Sensational Sherry was my favorite manager, but also looking back, she took so many bumps. And I remember WrestleMania 6, where it was the match between Queen Sherry, King Macho, and then Dusty Rose and Sapphire.
Yep.
And I was 5 then, and even though, bless her heart, Sapphire couldn't wrestle, Sherry did a hell of a job. So, yeah, that was another female icon in the wrestling business that I looked up to as a kid.
Okay, well, thank you very much for sharing that with us. I appreciate that. So while you were talking, I went and looked it up, and yes, Alundra Blaze, she did lose the title to Bull Nakano in Tokyo. I mean, yes, she did lose it to her in Tokyo. But then the follow-on feud to that, interesting, was when they had Bertha Faye that came up, and she was mm-hmm. the next opponent for Alundra Blaze. And I remember back reading again, by that time, of course, I was a smart fan. I remember reading about all the the people being not happy that we have Rhonda Singh, who was dressed up as Bertha Faye, and she was, you know, going to be this like really, she was like a really serious wrestler, and they dressed her up looking like that, you know, and just being basically a comedy act, and that's part of the thing that they felt killed WWF at that time, women's wrestling.
Yeah, it was terrible, and the Bertha Faye gimmick was super uncomfortable. It's just like they treated her like a freak show.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that was before. I mean, just thinking like women's wrestling has made so much progress. It's amazing just looking back 20 years ago and just see the difference. So,
I agree with you, and then I'll bounce back to I was a huge Macho Man fan. Like my favorite wrestler in the mid 80s. And so Sherry will always have a special place in my heart about how much she did bump around. And there was a time, and again, we'll get to something current here in a second, Rich, but there was a time where it was Medusa, Lunder Blaze, when she went back to WCW, she went back to Medusa. There's a time where Medusa and Sherry, like, two of the best workers, period, in wrestling, men or women, how much bumps they were doing. Because the part that we don't talk a lot about was when Medusa was in WCW, and that was when during the Dangerous Alliance times, where she was coming off the top rope and she was helping out Rick Rude and Paulie Dangerously fight men, and she was doing some incredible work back then. But let's go ahead and go to a future topic, and where I'm going to stick with a women's subject, Rich. But what I want to talk about is I know a person who's very close to your heart, Rich, is Asuka. So finally saw the TV, saw it on TV where she gave up the NXT women's title, but, you know, they kind of skirted it being that, okay, hey, she's going to probably sign with either – or she's going to sign with Raw or SmackDown. And they kind of mentioned that she was hurt, but that wasn't the emphasis of that whole thing, was that she's going to move on, and here's, you know, her Goldberg-esque run in NXT. But the part I'm interested in hearing both of you talk about, again, I was, again, a huge Asuka fan, and I liked what they did with her, and I'm glad that she's going up to the main roster once she gets healed up, undefeated, which is great. But what did you think at the end where, you know, some internet persons have said, you know, Triple H tried to steal, you know, or get the cheers as well by him coming out and interrupting it, or at least, you know, showing up there. So I want to get your feelings about Asuka, her situation, or at least like retiring or leaving as an undefeated champion, and also Triple H coming in at the end.
Brie, why don't you go first?
Okay. I'm actually really glad that Asuka is leaving NXT. It's beyond time, and she could easily enhance either Raw or SmackDown. So whenever she's healed, I'm really, very much so looking forward to seeing her on the main roster. Regarding the Triple H thing, I'm not bothered by it, only because he's done that for Sasha. He's done that for, gosh, pretty much every woman on the roster. So I don't think it's him trying to get his shine. I just think it's NXT tradition at this point.
I agree.
And, yeah, I, if anything, I would say he wasn't upstaging Asuka. If you're going to say he's upstaging anyone, he would have been upstaging Regal, because Regal is really the de facto, like, his emissary, if I can borrow this next generation, Deep Space Nine analogy. He's the emissary for Triple H and NXT, so when you see him, you know he has the weight of authority, et cetera, et cetera. So when Triple H shows up, it's always awkward. And it's not necessarily in a bad way, but you know, like, mom and dad are fighting. Like, go back to the UK tournament where Pete Dunne's murdering people between tournament rounds, and Triple H goes up to him and he's like, make a name for yourself, kid, while poor William Regal is apoplectic because he's like, you're going to ruin this thing I spent years putting together. So with the Asuka thing, he's going to come out. He gave her the flowers, just like they did with the ladies who made it to the semifinals and finals. And I was fine with it.
Okay. Again, yeah, I was fine with it, too. I know that, again, some internet people felt that, you know, Triple H was trying to satiate that crowd by showing up at that time. That's all I have for both of you. Let some other calls get on the line. Bree, it was nice talking to you. Hopefully we'll hear again soon on the PW Torch airways. And Rich, as always, have a real great weekend. Both of you have a real great weekend, of course. Thanks a lot.
Oh, no problem,
Thank
Brian.
So
it's
much.
Always a pleasure.
You have a great weekend.
Thank you.
All right. That was Brian from Phoenix, Arizona. delightful 26-year PW Torch VIP subscriber. And we have another caller. It's anonymous, so this is going to be mystery time. Welcome to the Deep Dive with Rich and Bree. Why don't you state your name and where you're calling from?
Hey, it's Craig from Toledo.
Hey, Craig.
Hello.
How are you guys?
Good, 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 good. So what do you have for us on this fine Saturday?
I have a couple things. The point about Triple H, is that the first time he's talked on WWE TV since WrestleMania? Because he hasn't been introducing takeovers recently.
Let's see.
That's a good point. You're probably right.
Yeah.
I think
that's
big time.
Oh, I'm sorry, Craig. I was going to say, timing-wise, the only thing that would have happened was the presentation for the finalists. But in terms of, I don't know how that works with NXT Real World, because you could watch it. You could have watched it on demand before you saw Wednesday's show. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it would have been officially the first.
But you mean the presentation of the Mae Young, like the flowers and stuff?
Yeah.
But he didn't speak then, did he?
You're right. He didn't speak. They just stood there and gave. Yeah. So this would have been the first time he talked.
Yeah, I thought that was big time. Because, I mean, she was already validated, but it kind of like brought more validation to it to me. I was wondering about your guys' opinion about the way the binge viewing, the process of binge viewing. Were either of you spoiled to know the results and stuff of the matches? And did that matter to you? Like Wade put up something a couple days ago. He says, I'm not done watching. I know he knows what happened. And he can just watch a match and not care about knowing the results of it. I have to be spoiler free in order to enjoy a match, except I was spoiled on the Shayna and Candice LeRae match. I pushed play on the wrong episode, and it showed up in the middle of that match, or at the end of that match, and I saw who won, and I'm like, damn it. But I watched the match, and it was one of the best of the tournament for me. So it's really weird. It's a weird thing for me with the spoilers happening. Does that affect either of you?
Brie?
Personally, it doesn't affect me, but I avoided them at any cost. Especially after the tapings and people were trying to post like, oh, this and this happened, and then the whole four horsewoman incident. Everyone saw that happen, but I tried to avoid them completely. But even with that, I don't think it would have ruined it for me. I think I still would have watched because I'm such a huge fan of a lot of the women. And also I'm intrigued by some of the women that I wasn't previously familiar with. So I was just going to watch anyway, just to see how they did. And, you know, regardless of the results, I want to see movesets. I want to see, you know, performances and just see things that I hadn't seen before. So I don't think the spoilers would have spoiled it for me. But on a side note, when you were talking about the clicking on a wrong episode, that happened to me as well. And the network's interface is so clunky and backwards on multiple platforms that it's so weird. Like, I wish they kind of reversed the order to make it oldest to newest as opposed to, like, newest to oldest, because you see things that you're like, well, damn, that kind of – I see where this is heading now. So yeah, I completely I agree with you on the interface aspect of it, kind of ruining things.
And for me, I'm the opposite, like I mentioned earlier with the Christmas example. If there's spoilers for something, I've read them. And I just keep it to myself because I'm it's the same thing with like Game of Thrones or I want to go see It probably after this is done. And I'm not going to be in the movie theater. You know, this is battery acid. You know, I'm not going to be screaming stuff that are spoilers, even though it's like a 30-year-old book. And I think that's the same way you have to treat spoilers when it comes to a tournament like this. You would not want someone to walk up to you and casually say, so, hey, you know, when Candice LeRae got choked out like she was a tackle dummy, you know, I really got shook. It's like, well, wait a minute. Now I'm thinking back in your head. You're like, how many rounds did she take to get to Shayna Baszler, which meant how many people did she beat? And it's just a mess. You don't want to do that to people. And I really, if there's one thing that's one of my grinds my gears, if I could borrow the Peter Griffin analogy, it's when people hop on Twitter that are fans of stuff and they want to spit out spoilers and they act offended that you're mad that I, you know, like if you go to see the Avengers movie or Black Panther in February and it's you see a preview on Monday before everyone sees it on Friday and you're just throwing spoilers willy-nilly and you're like, well, what? I saw it. You guys should just catch up. Like, no, that's not how this works and not how any of this works. And so, yeah, that's where I'm at with it. I didn't have the issue because I hit the butt. I'm used to the clunkiness and I've just given up and, you know, I usually when I watch WWE Network, I'll watch it when I'm on the treadmill. So I popped whatever the semifinal and final, well, quarterfinal and semifinals were. I put it on and then I found out amazingly that there's the Netflix function they stole where it's like, do you want to watch the next one? It's starting up in 15 seconds. So just stay there if you do. And so that was how I got to watch most of them either on the treadmill or before bed where I could watch like maybe a match or two and then kind of let it pick up from the last thing on that first page. But I definitely sympathize and agree with you guys as far as the clunkiness and usability. I think they need to hire you, Bree, in terms of making this work far more fan-friendly as possible. Because I don't know about you guys, when I try to search on the network, I tried, you know, because for a show coming up, I'm doing an episode where we talk about matches that weren't on the big four that stand out. And I'm trying to find In Your House Ground Zero because this is two of my favorite matches. And you type it in, and it's like each piece individually. I can't just say I want to see Bret Hart versus The Patriot. Or I want to see Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels. They got to step the game up is what I'm saying. Anything else for us, Craig, before we roll out of here? Actually, I got to take one quick break and then we roll out of here.
I got two more things. I don't know if you want to take the break. But
yeah, so let me put you both on the hold. And I'm going to take the final break. Then we're going to finish strong with Craig's questions due. And we'll be back on the PW Torch livecast deep dive.
Thank you for being a PW Torch livecast listener. As of mid-July 2017, the PW Torch livecast lineup has undergone some changes. My shows have moved to a new feed, the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast, available at Podcast One, or just search Wade Keller in your podcast app. But there's tons of great content every week, including Saturdays at 6 Eastern, the new Deep Dive with Rich Fan, covering a single topic in professional wrestling in depth. Join him live with phone calls at 6 Eastern every Saturday. Sunday nights at 8 Eastern, it is Wrestling Night in America with Pat McNeil and Greg Parks, where they focus on the supercards, the big events coming up in pro wrestling, or review the latest one. That's at 8 Eastern, or following a live pay-per-view, if there's a live pay-per-view on that Sunday. And then check out MMA Talk for pro wrestling fans every Monday night at 7 Eastern, hosted by Mike Hisko and other MMA Torch contributors. It's a chance for fans of both pro wrestling and MMA who share that in common to talk about the latest happenings in the world of mixed martial arts. Tuesdays, it's the best of PW Torch livecast, a hand-picked episode from our history that gives you a chance to catch up on a show you might have missed back in our earlier years. And then the PW Torch Nostalgia Hour with Jim Valley is back. It used to be called Saturday Morning Wrestling. Now it's Wednesdays at 5 Eastern. He takes your live calls and interviews some of the big names from pro wrestling's past. And then Thursday nights, following GFW Impact, it's Mike McMahon and Andrew Sochak with a recap of the just-concluded Impact Wrestling show on Pop TV. So as soon as Impact goes off the air in the United States on Pop TV, join Mike and Andrew live right here at PWTorchLivecast.com. They'll be taking your calls. That's the new lineup of the PW Torch Livecast. great diverse mix of shows with a great group of hosts. Keep listening and keep spreading the word and give us a 5-star rating over at iTunes with some kind comments in the listener comment section about which shows you like and why. That's PW Torch Livecast, new lineup. Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right, we're back for the home stretch of the deep dive with Rich Fan, of course, with me being Rich Fan. I'm back on now with Bree and with Senor Craig to tackle the last couple of questions he had for the World of Wrestling. So go ahead, Craig.
Which match do you think over-delivered the most? Not the best match, but as far as where your expectations were coming into the match.
Three. For the Mae Young Classic?
Yes, that's what I'm sorry. Yes.
Okay. The match that I exceeded my expectations and is absolutely my favorite match, even though it's just the first round, but I think it just stood out completely throughout the entire tournament, was the I take that back. I have two. I'm sorry, Craig. I lied to you. I have two matches that exceeded my expectations. One was the Jackie Guevara versus Abby Lace, and the second one was Bianca Belair versus Kairi Sane. Both of them exceeded my expectations beyond belief, and they were just absolutely phenomenal. Those are my two favorite matches of the tournament.
Let's see. For me, I would say, gosh, that's a good question, Craig. I'm going to cheat. I'm going to go with Bianca Belair, Kairi Sane as well, because I never thought I would hear a woman using her hair as a – I don't know if you count it as a foreign object, but when I saw Kairi's, like, the welts on her, she got worked, and you could hear it. Like, afterward, I'm sure she's, like, not going anywhere near Bianca in the back. Like, if they're doing training somewhere, she's like, I'll be on the other ring. We got 13 rings, right? I'll be on ring 13. She'll be on ring 1. We good.
Very nice.
Oh, that's actually, yet again, my partner in crime on the East Coast cast, Travis Bryant, and I had a delightful argument about this one, too. I wanted to ask you, Bree. And for you, Craig, you heard this as well when Travis and I argued. I am of the opinion that I could even make a deep dive of this, I guess, a little mini dive if I could. I think Bianca Belair, her attitude, her demeanor, her look, if you didn't know there was a Sasha Banks, she could be Sasha Banks.
Yep.
Even better, if we're being honest.
That's what I said, and Travis argued with me that that's an unfair statement. I was like, no, because Sasha, the biggest thing that holds her back is she's related to Snoop Dogg. She has this attitude. She's sassy, but then she opens her mouth, and it's the Boston accent.
Yeah. Yeah, the difference is that Bianca has that confidence and just the natural swagger, and it's not forced like Sasha, even though I adore Sasha to no end. She's inherently a nerd, and they're not letting her be a nerd. They're like forcing her to be this lost character who keeps losing. So I'm on your side with this one, Rich. Bianca could definitely be the real EST of NXT and beyond.
Yeah, it's interesting. What about you, Craig? I know you just said yes, I agree, but I'm also looking at like, okay, here's another one, I want to get both of your opinions on this. I mentioned this when I was on the Wade Keller podcast, on podcast one. I really feel like there needs to be a situation where Bayley is caught on tape getting, like, her knee blown out by Tessa Blanchard in a bid for Tessa to join the Four Horsemen.
Jeez, here we go.
It's meant to be, Craig. It's meant to be.
Everybody's
you have a Blanchard
right.
and a Flair. They have to be together.
Oh, gosh.
Bayley, I mean, listen. I love Bayley. But when it comes to horse doing hood rat horseman things, she's not built for it.
Hood rat horseman things. I'm stealing that.
I mean, Craig's heard this for a while because my argument's been the second they made the SmackDown and the Raw women's groups and they started having the warfare last year, you can't have Bayley hop a fence and jump somebody. Like, that's not her life. Let her be the one that's like, guys, we shouldn't be doing this. And they're like, okay, Bayley, either leave or just turn around because we got to handle this. Instead, she's the first one hopping the fence. Or when you look at the Mae Young Classic, which brings it back to our original subject, she's the person getting off the bus, staring down Shayna Baszler and Ronda Rousey as like the heavy of the four horsewomen, while Charlotte's in the back.
Yeah, I have to disagree.
Okay, Craig, go ahead. I heard you said you had to disagree. Go right ahead.
Well, first of all, I mean, I'm going to start keeping tallies on how many times you say that and how many times Wade rips social media and wrestlers. But the Bayley, did you not see Bayley like as Team Red attack Team Blue? Did you not see that? She had fire.
I did, Craig, and it was nothing like the character. Like, that's what I'm saying. Like, having Bayley do these things was just another way they tore the bricks down that was the foundation of her character. Like, she was the innocent girl that was bullied.
It's a story, dude. It's a story. She's young. She's got a long story. It's an arc. Probably one of the longer arcs they're doing right now. Her, Sami Zayn, the person that needs to come up, and then, you know, I want to see how she develops because it's going to be fun to watch, I think. I love Tessa Blanchard, and she did an interview. I forget what the hell podcast I heard it on. It was really, really good. And so was Bianca Belair. She did I think it was Wrestling Compadres or something like it. She did a really good interview there. Like, they've been doing some really, really neat stuff. I just want to make the Bianca the Belair point before I forget it because I've been drinking, you know how I am.
No, Craig, I know.
Was it you guys that said she was like a comic book character? It was on one of the podcasts I listened to recently.
Wait, who's a comic book character?
Belair.
Oh, I didn't say that.
Oh, no, I don't mean it you. I thought maybe Travis said it, but somebody said it was like a comic book character, how her, like, she was like, when she was walking down the aisle, twirling her hair, and I was like, that is a good observation, I think. And I thought it was you guys, because you guys talk about comics, and sometimes I zone out. I don't know.
See, Craig, see, I'm going to be nice on my own show. I'm going to be nice. Because you already called me out and said I had a Wade-esque when it came to Tessa Blanchard and Bayley. Now you're gonna tell me whatever you want.
I mean, you can put up a poll. I'm sure I'll come out victorious. But I'm so mad at you about the draft. I'll get off the phone after this. I just need to. I want to say first of all, I love you, Rich. He had a brilliant NXT idea about the tournament. And Bree, I look forward to having you back on the show. And I want you guys to, at the end of this fantasy book, what are your hopes and expectations for the Asuka debut? And I'll let you guys go on. Sorry for taking up some time.
No. Don't you apologize, Craig. It was a pleasure. And even though you want to just throw me under the bus with company over, I see how it is. I see how it is.
Thank you so much, Craig.
So what do you think, Brie? Asuka on the main roster, where do you think she should go, and what's the best way to introduce her?
That she would be best serviced on Raw because they need a stronger force. And, I mean, I love Nia Jax, but she's not intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're only playing on the intimidation that are, I think they're only playing her size to be intimidating, and that's kind of shitty to do to her. But like, knowing that she's so nice and, you know, even the way she sounds is not intimidating, I think that Asuka can actually be that force that scares the shit out of all of the women on Raw. And I think she, that would be the perfect place for her. Now, I envision her debuting on Survivor Series, of course, in the traditional Survivor Series sense, where SmackDown has their team of women and Raw has their team, but they're waiting on a special person to join the team, or there's a last minute replacement, kind of like what they did last year. So I think that would be the perfect time to debut her at Survivor Series.
Okay, and I think this is the first time where we diverge. I have been Team SmackDown for Asuka, mainly because it's the era of opportunity over there, and Becky Lynch can't be the only person holding it down. I think right now she's kind of lost in the sauce as the truest face they have over there. So to have Asuka as this next force would be a feather in Daniel Bryan's cap and Shane's proverbial cap, provided his dad doesn't fire him on Tuesday. And I think having her again, I was going to, you know, hijack the same thing. I think it's a Survivor Series scenario where she can get a full entrance and get the regalia and the swag that she's going to bring with that robe and her. I don't know if they're going to let her bring the tapestry like she did the one takeover, but that, I think that was the moment I realized Asuka, she had the juice. Like before that, she was cool. But when she came out with that tapestry behind her and she was just feeling it before she choked Bailey out for the second time and made her see the future and realize that, oh, wait, Candice LeRae's coming here too? Wait, she didn't. Oh, no. Oh, baby, no. You know, it's just, it's great. It's great. And I want to see that on SmackDown. But my fear is, I think you're right, because they don't want to have, at least on 205 Live, Tozawa is like on 205 and he can occasionally show up on Raw. I don't know how well they're going to do booking two Asian superstars that are supposed to be dynamic and quirky on the same show.
Mm-hmm. Right. I completely agree. And honestly, I mean, kind of the same treatment with Nakamura. Like, look how he's being treated on SmackDown. Like, even though his matches are phenomenal and they're booking him correctly match-wise, the promos aren't there. And we're not seeing his personality. He's just being painted as, you know, this enigmatic, charismatic character, but we don't really get to see him express it outside of the ring. So I'm kind of worried about that for Asuka on SmackDown.
Yeah, and I know one of the things I harped on when Nakamura first came up was they made him do the promos with his mouth guard in. So he already has difficult English. And it's not difficult. Like, when I met the man in person in Philadelphia, his English was fine. I mean, Tanahashi's was better, but his was fine. So to make it seem like he's so childlike, and that's a hallmark of a lot of Vince McMahon non-American characters. Like, they can't just be themselves. They have to have this weird quality about them where mentally they're not all there. I need to see more. But if you tell me there's a world where a wrestler from another promotion beats John Cena and Randy Orton and is challenging for the WWE title, I can't complain too much, I guess. Especially
and
with All Lives Matter.
No one
Orton
has seen that coming. Oh, God.
Oh, yeah.
Don't get me started
on like,
on RKK.
Yeah, I know.
KRKK.
Oh, wow. Wow. Yeah. See, I know. See, now we're at this point, we're a little bit over. Are you still good for time? If not, I can totally. Okay, good. Because, yes, I'm definitely going to have you back on and we can discuss RKKKO and Randall's social media. But yeah, my final thing I wanted to talk to you about is the body types in the Mae Young Classic, in wrestling in general. Like, we talked about our shared love of British strong style. I listened to Tuesday Night Jaw with Jim Smallman, and Trent Seven was on there, and he talked about the fact that, you know, he doesn't have a traditional build. He's lost a little weight since then, but, you know, no one's going to confuse him for Randy Orton.
And in the men's side, you have Rusevs, you have your Strowmans, you have all these different body types that are starting to come out, and no one's making fat jokes. No one's, you know, the days of, you know, the shaming that comes into certain body types, like Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens is a big boy, but other than the dumb, odd promo, most people, that isn't the first thing you talk about. You talk about the fact that he's a jerk and he tells someone, tell someone's kids that they hope their dad died in a helicopter crash, but that's about it. When we look at the Mae Young Classic, you earlier talked with Brian Austin about the birth of Faye and all the silliness that went on with her. I looked at this tournament and all of these women were treated with respect without over sexualization. Now, some of the characters may have had a sexy vibe with them, like Lacey Evans, who I don't know who thought it was a good idea to change her name from Macy Estrella to Lacey Evans. That's again, we could talk about whitewashing and wrestler names. But what were your thoughts on the tournament in terms of body shape representation and how overall the women were portrayed? Do you think they were overly sexualized? Is it my male gaze that's negating it back to a baseline? I really want to get your thoughts on that.
I think they were portrayed equally and and disregarding body type. And that actually made me very happy. You know, especially being a fan of Piper Niven or Miss Viper, you know, just them seeing her as a powerhouse and not just a big girl who can wrestle. They're actually respecting the talent of these women as opposed to looking at them as physical beings. So even though I've seen some tweets from some personnel in the WWE kind of over-sexualizing or pointing out body type, I appreciate the fact that on the broadcast of the Mae Young Classic that wasn't discussed and it wasn't brought up. And it's beautiful. Like, again, inclusion in wrestling is everything. And this tournament is so diverse in regards to ethnicities, body types, wrestling styles, wrestling backgrounds, experience. Like, it's just, you know, it's amazing. So I'm completely here for the way that they portray these women as equals across the board.
Excellent. Now, I'm going to go through a couple women in particular, and then we'll close up shop there, because I adore Mia Yim. I
love her. She's so sweet.
She really is. I follow her on Twitter, and I her and Shelton Benjamin have a relationship like one of my good friends and I have, where it's like, you, if you just followed their social media, you would think they won't have a kind word for each other. Because, I mean, I saw one and I was like, that's her. Oh, she had tweeted to him before he re-debuted on SmackDown. I was like, weren't you supposed to show up on SmackDown like a year ago? I was like, oh, that's hurtful. Like, why are you being mean? Like, oh, geez. So her, she's definitely one of my favorites. Her match against Shayna Baszler, that was the match, the infamous match in which I mentioned earlier, my partner in crime on the East Coast cast, got mad because he felt like it was too shooty. I loved it because Mia tried to bring her kicks and Shayna brought hers and we saw whose kicks won.
And
we
Mia
already talked about
sold the shit out of it too. Like, her expressions were amazing.
Yeah, that first leg kick that caught her on the hip and she did like a little limp for a good minute or two and was just tentative, like messed up her whole game. That, just chef fingers. Perfect. we talked about Piper, but I wanted to talk about Serena Deeb. And I wanted to talk about Serena for two reasons. Because for me as a guy, I don't know what the decision-making process was for her. Other than what she said, it like made her feel good. Again, this is another one of those weird things. Like, my mom would notice when I was in high school. And then as an adult, I'm like, well, crap, that sucks. Like, when I was in high school and, you know, during the Attitude Era, late 90s, every WWE woman at some point got a boob job. And it was just like the conveyor belt. You'd wrestle for a little bit. You get augmentation, you'd get in Playboy, and then you'd have a dispute with Vince McMahon and leave. And Serena did go under body modification when she was in the WWE, both with in terms of a breast job and then the hair. Like, my God, getting her hair shaven off and then going and joining the Straight Edge Society, which they didn't bring up in the tournament, much to my chagrin, but I guess we all know why. Her coming back with long hair as a yogi and removing the augmentation because she felt it was a part of the process that needed to cleanse her and make her whole because she was having back issues and all this stuff. Do you feel like she should have come back after 3 years? Is this kind of like the Jake Roberts return of a few years ago where the old demons can come back and haunt her? Or do you feel like this was a good, if anything, at worst, final chapter in her career?
Honestly, I'm kind of in between, and mm-hmm. I'm kind of apathetic to it, to be honest.
Okay.
I think this was good for her, and this was cool to see her again. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. She honestly didn't get to wrestle as much as I liked, even though I love Straight Edge Society, but she didn't get the spotlight as much when she was a part of it. And it's cool to see that redemption story, but I think it's just cool for the moment. If this has any long-lasting legs, cool, count me in. But if it's just for the Mae Young Classic, that's fine as well.
And then my final person, people. And again, as you've heard with some of the callers, I go off the rails when it comes to some of these ideas. I am all about a tag team. Since we're not going to get the world's cutest tag team anytime soon, I want the world's most savage tag team of Candice LeRae and Nicole Savoy. Do you ship this?
Absolutely. I have a she crush on Nicole Savoy. Like, she is not only great in the ring, but like, she's such a talker that mm-hmm. That would be amazing. So yeah, I 100% ship that. I just want to see Nicole Savoy on my screen on the main
she's
roster.
Great.
She doesn't even have to go to NXT. So
yeah,
she's my favorite of the trifecta.
Yeah, she is. I look at her. She's got the attitude. She has just the look. And she's the best of the world. So she has the wrestling. She has the MMA. And for me, seeing her with Candice LeRae as a tag team would be the perfect, because I always like the, you know, I'll call it the dudes with attitudes tandem, where you have a tall and a small, and you have conflicting styles, and you have personalities. Like, Candice is just this bubbly human being. Even when she's getting her face kicked in by the young Bucks, she's still bringing it, and she's still happy to be in the ring, and she's, you know, she's fierce. Nicole Savoy would kick the Young Bucks' head off. And I love Nick and Matt. Much love to you guys. You know this. But seeing the two of them together, like, I know NXT at some point isn't going to do the women's tag team titles, but I think that would be a good thing to have, like Iconic, the Iconic duo, where you have at least two people that are looking out in the back. And I feel like in NXT, that's one of the few places where the old school rules of faces, or if you have a friend, they'll watch your back, still are in effect. But you brought up a really good point too, in that Nicole really could be on the main roster.
Absolutely. Now, I would love to see her on SmackDown.
Oh, yeah.
That's one person that could definitely get that push on SmackDown. And be a viable heel or a face even.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, you know what? She's been better as a tweener. She has the attitudes of like, I don't care either way. Like, I'm just here to kick ass. So
right.
I can definitely see that.
In the spirit of my Sasha Banks example, I feel like if you didn't tell us until you met the people, she could pass as Tamina Snuka. She would be my ideal Tamina.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just take that last name off, because, yeah, problematic. So that's great. First of all, thank you. Thank you, Bree, for your time. I definitely want to have you on at some point, again, to talk about Progress in particular, or PWG if you're so inclined, because I've gotten a lot of emails about PWG. But it's so tough to do a show on them because of the release. Like, I wanted to do the Battle of Los Angeles last week, but it was like Battle Bola versus Mae Young. I was like, I can actually watch Mae Young. I can only read about Bola.
Right.
So I definitely want to talk to you about some of that. And I want to talk to you about, too, the marketability and the importance of that aspect, since that is your wheelhouse for wrestlers at some point when you're willing. Why don't you let the folks know? Awesome. That's great. That makes my heart glad. Let the folks know where they can find you, and we'll close on that note.
Okay. Well, you all can find me at She's So Offbeat. That's She, double S, double O, double F, Beat on Twitter. And you can just hear me make shady comments whenever there's a wrestling event going on, or just see me randomly tweet nerdy things about anything in general, especially other sports. So that's where you guys can find me.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much. Guys, it's been a pleasure. Bree was awesome. Obviously, you know this. I'm looking forward to chatting with her in the future and, of course, chatting with you guys. So if you have any ideas for a future deep dive, feel free to shoot me an email, pwtdive@gmail.com. That's pwtdive@gmail.com. Coming up, we're going to have a couple of things in terms of deep dives. Like I said, over the next month, month and a half, we're going to be doing a lot of stuff on inclusion, some big match things. But next week, I'm going to have one of our Torch contributors, Dominic, talk about the Pittsburgh indie scene. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that, have some fun, and I'm looking forward to it. In the interim, as always, I'm going to challenge you. Dive into something new. Give yourself a challenge. Learn about how awesome you can be when you push yourself. It's been a pleasure. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. And as always, keep on diving.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the Ask the Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in-depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip.